You're listening to the USEA official podcast, which takes you behind the scenes of eventing, covering all the big events, professional tips and tricks, interviews, special guests, and the latest USEA eventing news. Welcome to the USEA official podcast, episode 251. We are there and we have a whole group of lovely people to fill your ears. I'm going to start by saying hello to Rob Burke.
Hi, Nicole. How are you?
Very good. How's your week been?
Very pleasant, pretty calm, and watching lots of live streams, and that's about it.
Good. Watching the live stream from Wellington, you didn't get to go down to sunny Florida?
No, our glorious president and media representatives were there, but no, I get to stay home.
Oh, well, that's okay. I'm sure the kids loved it. Max, were you down in Wellington?
I was down in Wellington. I was wearing the organizer hat for helping organize the showcase.
Oh, brilliant. That is a very important hat. That's actually probably quite a nice place to start. What sort of organization will go into an event of that scale? Because it is massive, isn't it?
Well, the numbers of the horses is not huge, but we are transforming a dressage facility that sometimes does jumping into a facility that does all three phases. So that is a little tricky, and to sort of educate the staff there, they don't quite understand that the horses that are doing the dressage test are also the same horses that are going to do the show jumping, that are also the same horses that are going to do the cross country. So it's a bit of a learning curve, and that we go from one to the next and all that type of stuff. And then setting the cross country jumps and just sort of helping out. I mean, obviously, Shelley Page is sort of she's the circus leader, and she brings in the top people to sort of help make this happen. So it goes fairly seamless. Yeah.
Well, it was certainly a big success in 2020. Derm, you are with us once again. We're going to talk about Wellington in a bit more detail, but did you manage to catch any of the live stream as well?
I did, of course. I like that we're moving closer to having almost a year-round calendar of eventing.
I love it. Yeah. I get very depressed in the winter otherwise.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I watched it. So yeah, great. Very exciting stuff, and all influential as we try to piece together the jigsaw of some of the other events that's come through the year. And I think that's one of the cool things about the sport generally, where you get to see that it isn't all focused on one single event. So this year, obviously, we'll talk a lot about Tokyo. And sometimes, as we've talked about on the previous episode, where we can have a lot of focus on those kind of showcase five stars. But actually, what's cool about the sport, I think, is how we piece together event to event and how progress happens at all levels. So I think Wellington played a big role in that, and it adds another piece of the jigsaw for riders and owners and selectors. And, you know, it's another big consideration for everyone. So, yeah.
It's always nice to see big combinations coming out early in the season, though. It is obviously kicking off as it means to go on with selection, with getting their seasons off to a good start under pressure. I can't wait. Really looking forward to it. Now, we actually spoke to a man who had a very successful weekend in Wellington, and I managed to catch up with none other than the man who finished second to Marilyn Little. It is Buck Davidson, who finished on his dressage score with Carlevo.
Welcome to the USEA official podcast, Buck Davidson.
Hi there, how are you? Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming on, because I think you're talking to us in between horses at Rocking Horse Horse Trials, is that right?
I am, yep. I've got to do a dressage test here in about 35 minutes, so talk fast.
We will keep it quick. How much warm up do you need?
Not too much. He's his first advance, but he's quite a nice horse, so I should be fine.
Oh, good. Well, firstly, congratulations on a great result at Wellington. You were second with Carlevo, finishing on your dressage score. Amazing result for you. Start of the season, starting 2020 as you mean to go on.
Yeah, I mean, he was very, very good in all three phases. He feels like a better horse this year. I feel like I learned a lot with him at Blenheim last year, that, you know, he galloped all the way and felt like he did it very, very easily. And so I've, you know, just kind of stepped on the gas a little bit in the first two runs, and I've sort of decided I'm not going to teach him to go fast by going slow. And yeah, I mean, he's very good in the dressage. He always has been. And the show jumping has always been a bit of a work in progress, but I feel like, you know, he jumped, you know, a lot of clear rounds last year. The only rally he had was the one down. He had second last fence at Blenheim. I thought he jumped very well in the show jumping. That would have been a very difficult track for him. He was obviously very big and, you know, in a big open area. So, you know, for him to concentrate and jump that well was really exciting. And then, you know, the cross country I thought would be easy for him. But it was good. It was good to get a bit of pressure to, you know, this early in the season and, you know, have to, you know, get inside the time and, you know, have a sort of an exciting cross country school, if you will.
I was going to ask, because it must be so important for these top horses to have exposure to sort of high pressure, to crowds, to that kind of environment, that actually the Wellington Eventing Showcase is perfect, and perhaps why we saw such a top class field, for giving them that sort of exposure this early on in the season.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's, you know, that was sort of, you know, Carlevo is, you know, he doesn't really care too much about atmosphere. He's kind of been around the world now. He's been sort of competitive. He's not been a winner very often, but he's been competitive. And, you know, so I wasn't, you know, too worried about that with him. It's just, it was kind of a thing where you felt like you could go and win. And, you know, so that was good. And then for my young one, he is very spooky and a baby, and I thought it would help him. And, you know, it's a little bit different. You know, I think we were all expecting to go in the stadium and jump in the stadium and do the dressage in the stadium. So that was a little bit different, obviously, being in the covered arena. And, you know, if being flat honest, maybe a little bit disappointing because it wasn't quite the same atmosphere that you would get. We don't do big tests indoors, but you know, it's beautiful footing and all that stuff. And the show jumping, though, I think was great practice because we don't jump that big and we don't usually do them in areas, you know, that big and on grass. So I think that was actually a great thing to practice. And you know, I know there was horses that knocked a lot of rails down, but I think there was you know, it was definitely certainly for this early in the year, it's fairly stiff tests. And, you know, couldn't have been happier with Carlevo.
And in terms of Carlevo, I mean, he was agonizingly close to the win. I think at one point he almost had it. If Marilyn had been one more second over the time, he would have won. But he did everything he could have done. He finished on his dressage score. He's 13 this year. What's the plan with him? He's very established at four-star level now. Will he go to Kentucky in April?
He will. Yeah, that's the plan. He's, you know, he went to Kentucky a few years ago. And then last year I had four that were actually sound, fit, and ready to go. And he was kind of the one left home. Maybe that was a mistake. It didn't matter. I fell off my first one, broke my collarbone anyway, so I didn't get to ride any of them. But, you know, he's definitely, you know, if he's fit, sound, and well, he's definitely on the truck to Kentucky for sure. You know, and I'm sort of, you know, I never want to get ahead of myself, but I'm sort of cautiously optimistic with him. I feel like he's a better horse. He's a stronger horse. And, you know, that, you know, I hope, you know, he could, if I ride good enough, he might could just be good enough.
And he's very, very good, as you say, in the first phase. He's a very, very solid cross-country performer. I mean, you have to go back to, God, a few years now, 2016, for him to last have a fault. He's very, very reliable. So with the show jumping as well, having really stepped up a gear last year, all of the ingredients are there. Now, Buck, before I let you go, because I don't want to cut into your warm-up time, you may know this, you may not know this, but we love an equerating stat. Now, in turn, you are one of the busiest riders on the circuit. We talk about Oliver Townend in Great Britain, who has a huge number of international runs, of the likes of Izzy Taylor, Andreas Dabowski from Germany, but you are well up there. So in terms of riders with the most international runs in the last 5 years, you are ranked five. So you have 213 runs in the last 5 years. How do you manage that sort of string of horses, that amount of commitment? Because you juggle it brilliantly.
Well, that's very kind. I'm not sure I do a great job, but, you know, I try it. Like, you know, obviously you have a great team behind you, and, you know, I, you know, sort of take pride in having the horses last for a long time, and, you know, I'd be more inclined to give them time off rather than give them injection, because I want them to be like Reggie is now at 20 years old, perfectly sound and cruising around, you know, Kathleen Rogers around the cross country field that does whatever. And, you know, I just, I love the horses, and I think it's, you know, I'm not somebody that goes and, you know, has people that are going to spend, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars on made horses. And I think that, you know, keeping them for a long time sort of is what helps me, you know, get that number. I mean, I wish I had 217 or whatever it is wins rather than take parts, but, but it is,
you've got to be in it to win it, but you've got to be in it to win it.
Yep. That is for sure. I mean, I have, obviously my wife is, amazing, and, you know, she does a lot of the training on the horses, you know, with, you know, I do a lot of teaching around the world, teaching clinics and that kind of stuff. And so Andre would be a huge asset to me as far as, training the horses, you know, if I'm not there. Kathleen, has worked for me forever, and, she keeps the horses in tip top shape, and, you know, have good vets and farriers, and, you know, just sort of have a system that, allowed the horses to last for you know, a good length of time. So if they last for a good length of time, then you get to go to more events.
Well, it is obviously working. Buck, thank you so much for taking the time out to talk to us. Good luck at Rocking Horse this weekend. Congratulations on a great result at Wellington, and we'll be looking forward to following your progress this spring.
All right. Thanks so much, Nicole. Take care.
Thank you, Buck.
Oh, Buck is such a competitor, and he was so agonizingly close to him to taking the top spot. It just goes to show that at every single little penalty point, I mean, 1 second slower on the cross country and Marilyn would have lost the win and Buck would have taken it. It is the smallest of margins.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, we've seen it a number of times, whether it's, again, thinking about those really big showcase competitions, we've seen it. I mean, badminton last year was a 1 second victory. We've seen it as the last rail at a recent Olympics in 2012. We saw it as the last rail at the World Championships. These tiny, tiny margins can completely change how sometimes, from a public point of view, how those horses are viewed, and how the riders are viewed and how much coverage they get and all of these things. So one of the important things from a data point of view is having the ability to be able to step back and understand what chance variation is and not be too concerned about a 1 second, whether you're first or second. Yes, you don't have that rosette, but your horse is not necessarily, you know, you're not going to change your process based on a single second here and on another day. That is a win. So yeah, tiny, tiny margins. And it's a huge part of our business, Nicole, as to how we really concentrate on breaking down these three phases. And then don't forget there's time penalties within there as well. So probably 6 or 7 different ways in which those penalties rack up, and then breaking them down and understanding them, and I suppose not being obsessed over the final placing, which is what can happen a lot of the time, and concentrating on the process.
Yeah, it's really interesting actually, because every little penalty point does count and it can make a big difference. And that actually probably leads us on to our next point, because we're going to talk a bit here for you listeners about USEA News Corner. And we're going to go through a few of the key things that have happened in the last couple of weeks. And one of them would be prize money. So the smallest of penalty points can make a big difference actually on prize money and how much prize money you win. It can be very expensive. It can be very lucrative, whichever way you look at it. And news in the last couple of weeks that actually Carolina Horse Trials, which takes place in the third week of March, which I have to admit I'm very excited about because I'm coming over for, Max, they've announced an increase in their prize funds. I think it's $100,000, which is a massive amount.
It is. And what the nice thing that Carolina does too, which I think is so great for them, and that organizing committee is just incredible, and they do such a great job with that competition. We joke because every little thing is sponsored by some company. You know, the warm-up jump, the show jumping warm-up is sponsored by this company, and the breakfast is sponsored by another company, and, you know, the porta potties are sponsored by another company. They've got everything sort of covered, and they do such a good job with that. And the other nice thing with Carolina is that they put the prize money straight through the national divisions and the international divisions. So it gives everybody a reason to be there, which is really nice because, as we know, our sport is expensive. I mean, not compared to the jumpers, but we don't have the opportunity to win the money back like the jumpers and the dressage people do. So the effort that they've put in is just absolutely incredible.
I think it probably covers, their attention to detail covers everything. You just mentioned they're having so many different sponsors. One, they're keeping them happy, and their support is coming back year after year. But literally, they do not miss a trick. Every single little thing that they can do to make that event bigger and better every single year, they do. And it is one of those events that actually leads by example, because others will go to it, they'll want to go back, they'll look up to it, they give ideas, they really generate a huge amount of interest. So big news for Carolina, and I think it will mean that we see a very, very competitive field as we head into, I mean, they run a four-star short, which usually sees a good number of horses using it as Kentucky prep. And then down the levels, Liz Halliday-Sharp had her very, very successful run in not only the four-star short, but in the three-star classes last year. So you see a lot of younger horses coming through, coming up to top level as well. And it promises to be a really good 2020 edition. I'm looking forward to it, as I say, coming out. And I have to just go back and be very English for just a second. Porta potty. That is the best word I've ever heard. Toilet or loo or whatever you would call it. Sorry, that was very English of me, but brilliant. Okay. The next thing we wanted to talk about was actually Chris Quinn nominated as Volunteer of the Month for January. Was it for January, Rob?
Yes. Yep.
Yes. Yep. Now, we mentioned a little bit on the last podcast how important the volunteers are. Events can't run without them. And actually, you can nominate. So if you want to nominate anybody that, I don't know, picks up the poles at your local one day event, that stands on the collecting ring. And actually, I think I saw David O'Connor's been doing his collecting ring duty recently. But absolutely anybody that is involved in at an event that volunteers, you can do it, Rob. And it is brilliant recognition for them.
It is, yeah. And we're pretty proud of our program. We have the eventingvolunteers.com and the associated app that we always recommend people go to. But like you said, anyone can be nominated, and we recommend that people reach out to Claire Kelly at the USEA, and her email address is CKELLEY@useventing.com, or really just any one of us here at the USEA, and we'll get it to the right person. But Athletics has been doing those stories for us, and we really want to do everything we can to promote volunteers, because Nicole, you've been good about reminding us regularly that volunteers really do make the sport go. We can't do it without them.
You really can't. And actually, when they go on to eventingvolunteers.com, it's possible to log all of the hours that you volunteer, isn't it? So you can actually keep track of it and monitor it, and you can get rewards depending on the number of hours that you've actually put in.
You can, yeah. And that's what goes towards our year-end awards, both in the areas as well as on the national level. And certain horse trials use it as well to give out prizes for their events as well. Just a great program. And for events that haven't begun to use it yet, and a majority now are, but for events that haven't, it's a real simple system, very similar to some of the other systems they've used in the past online. And even folks who haven't gone to this online system, I think if they try it once, they'll get hooked, because the guy who actually makes this work and runs it is a gentleman by the name of Nick Hines. And he just puts his blood and sweat into making this work. So even if there's a little thing an organizer doesn't like, he'll tweak it and make it even better.
It is incredible. And actually, I think there's already some, just the medals that you can earn. So if you earn over 500 volunteer hours, that's a bronze medal, you get a polo shirt, you get a pin, a certificate. A silver medal is over 1,000 hours, I mean, 1,000 hours is incredible that you get an embroidered vest, a certificate, a pin as well. And if you do over 2,000 hours and you've got to log everything that you do that you volunteer for, you can log it. It will all count towards it. You get an embroidered jacket, you get a pin, certificate, and that gold medal status. So it is incredible. A few people have already got themselves up to the bronze medal. Michael Smallwood, he's over 700 hours. Diane Bird is hot on his heels with nearly 670, and Paige Irvin as well. So it is incredible. And that they're hours that have been accumulated over the last few years. So just keep logging away, eventingvolunteers.com listeners.
Nicole, do you know how many days 700 hours is?
Go on then, nearly, how many days?
It's nearly a full month, 29 days, day and night of volunteering.
That's incredible though. But anybody that puts that much time and effort in.
A full month of your life.
Amazing.
And that's only,
it's not like you don't
years.
Just you, yeah, it I is mean, over the it is over a period of years, so from 2016 end of 2016 I think that counts from, so I mean that's incredible.
Yeah, we're 2016 yeah. is not that long ago, like if you think of actually how many months there are, so like what's that, I guess it's four full seasons, is it 2016 2017 2018 2019?
Yeah,
so that's how many months, 48. And he's already given one of those fully of his life, day and night, to the volunteering. I mean, it's an incredible commitment. And that's why the medals and the logging of the hours is so important, because it's another one of those bits that has been so intangible for so long. I love and hate how we talk about, you know, things in such intangible ways of, you know, it's amazing how the volunteers keep the sport alive. It's a great thing to be able to say, but for someone like Michael now to be able to say, well, actually, this guy has given 1 month of the last 48 of his life entirely to volunteering for our sport in the USCA. Now it really becomes tangible. And that's what those medals represent. So, yeah, I think it's a brilliant initiative to be able to actually really recognize people rather than kind of broad stroke recognition, which I think is something we've always been able to do.
Yeah, absolutely. We ought to get Michael or somebody else that volunteers regularly on the show.
He's given us enough hours.
True.
Okay, more Sorry, of Michael, hand, please, Michael.
You can log it. You can log it, Michael. It's okay. No, it is a very, very important point, though. And actually, it just makes you realise, log it. If no matter what you do, log it. Because do you know what? Every little bit adds up and it does make a difference. And we couldn't do it without you. So we really are very, very grateful. Okay, next to talk about actually kind of goes on a volunteer base, I imagine, because actually they will have called upon a lot of people's good nature, a lot of people's hard work, and a lot of people have come together to bring Stableview back together, because there was a tornado just a week or so ago, last Thursday, and it absolutely ripped through Stableview. It destroyed 100 temporary stalls. There were, I think, 60 mature longleaf pine trees that were damaged and had to be removed. Luckily, no people or horses were harmed. But Rob, that kind of destruction, it's a massive cost. It's a massive disruption. And actually, it's a huge effort to bring it back together. And the show goes on for Stableview.
Yeah, it does. I actually spoke with Barry Olaf, the owner operator, this weekend, and you know, I said, is there anything we can do to help? And the one thing he said is you know, we continue to need help to get the facility back up to the same level it was before. But he said everything from a competition standpoint is currently unaffected. Their plan is to go on. But I mean, if you think about the you know, 60 mature trees, and to put it into kind of perspective, that's about, I think he said about 100 to 150 jumps that they could potentially construct out of the trees that fell. But imagine that all over the property, or, you know, over the areas that in some spots would have been cross country. But it's the sheer volume of it is intimidating to say the least. So, you know, we're kind of doing a call out to anyone who has some time, has some equipment, would love to go help one of our events. Stableview could use it. And, you know, I think we'd be remiss if we didn't do this for any event that offers to host our sport at their site, that I think we should all team up, go help. And that's from whether it's public or private, a local park that has an event to a private operation, you know, to make this sport so it's viable, we need to have land and help these landowners out as much as we can. So please, anyone who has some time, Barry said, call them up directly, call the event. You can find their contact information on our website. They could use it.
It's amazing, isn't it? When there was a quote recently, I think it was actually Sam Watson that said it, and it was relating to the Australian bushfires, but actually it relates to this as well. When the going gets tough, the equestrian community kind of get going, and it's actually then that everybody really does pull together. And, you know, every little bit does help, and the support, even just knowing that there's somebody there on the end of the phone, makes a real difference. So Stableview is business as usual. They've got an event at the end of this month. Their big event, international event at the end of March, continues, and we'll look forward to seeing some of those new jumps. I mean, that is turning a negative into a positive. I'll look forward to seeing some of those. Okay, we mentioned on our last show the Intercollegiate Championships, which excitingly is heading over to the West Coast, and Fresno Park have very kindly stepped up. They're hosting a pilot event this year, Rob, is that right, to make sure that if there's enough interest from next year, they can actually have a league?
That's right. Yeah. So we're looking for six universities to be represented. We know for a fact right now that two are in UC Davis and then Cal Poly San Luis Obispo. So it is kind of, we're looking for people to step up. It could even be one person representing a university, but the Board of Governors of the USCA has said, in order to host that championship on the West, a championship on the West Coast next year, they want to see six universities stand up. And we have a few other universities that have been active out in the Western United States, but we need them to commit to go to the challenge this year.
My friends, Auburn, I'd like them to go, because I want them to be in tip-top condition as they go for this.
Just going to be some more prep.
Repeat.
Yeah, I'm really backing them this year, and I know you lot think this is potentially going to be broken because this dominance can't continue, but I'm putting all my eggs in the Auburn basket, as you know, so all this. Yeah.
I think for Auburn to get out to Fresno, California, it would only be about a 30 to 40 hour
just a trip down the road. I mean, it's commitment. A little bit out commitment. Of their travel, maybe, D.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe Eckerton will sponsor their travel budgets.
That's going to be clipped. Auburn University, yeah. Get in touch
just
with them.
Yeah.
So it can just be, you don't have to have a team, Rob, is that right? Just an individual can represent their college, university at the event.
Yeah, absolutely. Just one person, that's all it takes. And there's even, you know, I'm going to call out one university, because there is a Fresno State University in Fresno, and all they need to do is have one person roll out of bed, get their horse, go to the event. They could go beginner, novice, they could do any level, the most intro of levels. So, you know, it shouldn't be too hard for at least one more to be added to the roster.
Oh, come on. We can make this happen. We can absolutely make it happen. Bully your friends. Get them involved, because it would be brilliant to see it roll out into 2021. And thank you very much to Fresno for offering to host it this year as well. Fingers crossed we can make it a success, and we will be covering it as it happens as well. We've already talked about one sort of big sponsorship and prize money news, Max, but the other being actually the news that the Dutch Corporation have come on board once again as title sponsor of the USCA Young Event Horse Championships.
Yes, this is really, it's great. With Duda has been sponsoring Fairhill International for a long time, the four-star championship for a long time. And with the four-star championship has now moved to the Ocala Jockey Club. So they still want to stay involved with Fairhill International. And with doing that, they're going to sponsor the Young Event Horse, which is very, very cool for those horses that are coming up, help let them travel internationally somewhere down the road, which is really cool. Dude has been part of the international eventing crew for a long time, as they are the title sponsor, or the big sponsors for the USEF and the High Performance Group. So they just keep stepping up and helping us out. They're such a great group.
Yeah, and I'll add that they are the cool thing about this, our Young Event Horse program, which is very similar to what you see over in the UK and elsewhere, is it's been growing year after year. And so we have this interesting grant, the Holcamp Turner Leleone grant, which sends one of our horses, young horses, over to the 7-year-old championships. And the way that the horse gets it is, one, they have to actually enter into this YEH championships as a 5-year-old. And then if they qualify for Lyon by their 7-year-old year, they can be in the running to earn this grant. And it really is the horse that performed the best at the championship is the first one to get the option for the grant, if that makes sense. And then the grant passes down the line. So it could be the horse that came, you know, in 20th place at the championship actually gets the grant, continues to pass down. And so this flight will also go along with that. So if you think about it, this grant can actually be $17,500. So you add that to an international round trip flight, and all of a sudden, there's a lot more support for that horse to make it to the world championships and represent our country. So it's great for the development of our future horses for the team. It's pretty exciting, and Duda really knocked it out of the park with this one.
It's a big incentive, isn't it? I mean, the Lyon d'Angers Young Horse World Championships is where all of the future top level stars really start to gather. And the 7-year-old class, we see year after year the top names coming through, competing at that level against other horses at a similar stage. It's giving these horses massive international exposure, an exposure to a championship that's going to stand them in really good stead for the rest of their career.
Yeah, I think that's the key bit. It's the atmosphere is what, when we talk to, I suppose, some of the riders on this side of the world, Katie King in the UK, Tom Carlile in France, Ingrid Klimke in Germany, you know, the riders who have really excelled at that 7-year-old age group, one of the things that they'll constantly talk about is being able to be exposed to those big atmospheres. And it absolutely isn't all about winning when you get to somewhere like that. It is about the experience of traveling. And I think that particularly for some riders is beneficial, not just for the, you know, from an equine point of view, but actually traveling as a team. You know, if this is a career and something that you're going into more seriously, traveling outside of the US and having, you know, grants, and there's a number of USEA grants which support that, but having this one from a 7-year-old point of view is just a huge, I suppose, step up in terms of being able to make that a reality. And sometimes it is just things as small as that which can, I suppose, make the difference in terms of being able to make the jump up to the next level, or to think about your, you know, how you're progressing your horses or your own career. So it can feel like small one-off benefits, but it's very difficult to quantify what actual impact it can have. I think when we talk to a lot of the riders who've been very successful at that, you know, production stage of horses, a lot of them would credit the ability to go to new places and expose their horses to different atmospheres, different places, different judges, and compete against the best in the world as a really big part of their development. So yeah, a massive opportunity here.
And they don't get to see, I mean, that cross country course there is second to none. I mean, the pictures of it, you're not, sort of an experience within itself that any horse is lucky to go to.
It's almost a work of art, the cross country at Lyon, isn't it?
Beautiful. It's incredible.
It's absolutely amazing. If you haven't seen it, just go online, Google it, look out for the live stream when it comes around. It's normally towards the end of October, sort of third week of October in the season, and they do the live stream. But the cross country in particular is just remarkable. And the French crowd are so enthusiastic, and they absolutely pile in to all support. So these horses will have seen crowds that they've never seen before as well. It's all really, really important in their development. And hopefully we'll see a few future US stars coming through it as well. Yeah. So really important. The calendars for the Young Event Horse and Future Event Horse are all available at useventing.com if you are interested. And one other major piece of news, Rob, is the changes to the modified division this year.
Right. Yeah. So the modified division, I think everybody knows by now that it's on the national scene. It is our equivalent to the new one-star division. So we created it actually first before the FEI came out with the new one-star division. And I think we did it really in part anticipating the addition to bridge the gap between our national training and preliminary divisions, because that's always been really the largest jump from one division to the next. And what happened this year by the rules is that now the modified division is actually a licensed division of the U.S. Equestrian Federation. Some people get often confused between the U.S. Equestrian Federation and the USEA. The USEA, we represent the sport. We are the affiliate that represents everything to do with the sport. However, the USEF really is the regulator. And at the end of the day, the modified has now become a licensed division. It changes a little bit the way we enter. So anyone who wants to enter into a modified division also needs to be a USEF member or to purchase what they call a show pass, which is a daily pass, to compete at that level. And also the events, it changes a little bit the way that they register and run that particular level. Not a whole lot, but there is a little bit more on the licensing side of thing through the USEF. And it's just important people be aware so that they don't enter into a division this year at modified and then quickly realize that they haven't checked all the boxes. So that's it.
It's useful to know though, isn't it? Because actually these things are really important and it's better to know them now than get caught out by them later. So listeners, we hope that has helped. We have got so much coming up for you on the USEA official podcast. We have lots of exciting plans and we would love to know what you guys would like to hear as well. So we've got a brand new email, podcast@useventing.com. Send in your suggestions, send in your feedback, send in your ideas, get involved on social media, comment, like, share, tell your friends, subscribe. We would absolutely love it. We really appreciate the support. In terms of a couple of the episodes, one, how to plan your season. Something that everybody sits down at the start of the year, blank sheet of paper, calendar, what do we do next? Max, it's important to look at it and we are going to come up with some top tips, talk to some experts and hopefully give listeners a bit of a helping hand.
Yes, absolutely, because it's very different in America, depending on where you live or if you're lucky enough to come south. So trying to plan out your whole year is not only important for your being successful, it's really important for you, the health of your horse, for you, for everything else. It's really critical to sit down with somebody that can help you out and get the year planned.
So we've got that coming up. We will have lots of top tips, rider fitness, horse fitness, in-depth interviews. We're going to catch up from the USEA symposium, which is happening in the next week or so. You name it, we will have it coming up for you, but we would love your ideas as well. So as I say, follow us on social media at US Eventing. Send in your emails, podcast@useventing.com. But team, it has been a pleasure. Thoroughly enjoyed it as always. And lots to look forward to. Derm, leave you back to sunny Ireland, which I imagine isn't sunny at the moment.
No, we're dealing with our own storms. It sounds pretty innocuous and pointless when you're listening to what Stableview have gone through. But from an Irish kind of point of view, we've had pretty heavy rain weather. And wind. Yeah, you have as well, haven't you?
We've had, not in the same.
Not in the same league as these kids.
But definitely the weather in England is very, very wet and very
wild.
Well,
you go enjoy that.
Yeah, exactly. Rob, Max, are you both heading to the symposium?
I am, Max.
I will be, yep, that's home for me. So I actually will be home next week. So I will be popping in and out in between work.
Ah, brilliant. Well, we will look forward to hearing your thoughts on it and getting all the behind the scenes for anybody that hasn't been able to attend. And you can still get your tickets if you're interested. Andreas Dabowski, the German Olympic medalist, will be leading on that one. That is all we've got time for on this episode of the USEA official podcast. A huge thank you to Rob, to Max and to Derm. A thank you to you for listening. Send in your suggestions. We'd love to hear from you on social media. And we'll be back very soon with another episode of the USEA official podcast. Thanks for listening to the USEA official podcast. If you have any suggestions or feedback, then we would love to hear from you. Get in touch through any of our social media platforms at US Eventing, and don't forget to subscribe on your preferred podcast platform to make sure you don't miss an episode.